her bag of tricks. On a second-floor balcony over the entrance, he saw another pair of men. They sat at a table drinking bottled water, but Court had no doubt the men had firearms and order to keep watch all around. Inside the walls of the home, Court and Zoya encountered somewhere between 12 and 15 more men, bringing the total number of operatives around here to over 30. These wouldn't all be bodyguards for Colonel Dai. No, Court was pretty sure he was looking at some sort of paramilitary strike force. Court and Zoya entered the kitchen of the home, where Colonel Dai Longhai sat alone at a wooden table with a laptop open in front of him and a mobile phone in his hand. His eyes furrowed when he saw Zoya, but he put down the phone and motioned for the two of them to take a seat in front of him. This was awkward for Court, to say the least. He wanted to speak to Dai outside the earshot of Zoya, but he saw no way to keep her out of it now. He could only hope she had the good sense to play dumb, like she was just a tourist Court had picked up along the way. While in truth she didn't know what was happening right now, surely she was sharp enough to know that admitting to the Chinese that she was a Russian spy who'd been running the task force in charge of kidnapping Fawn would not go over well in this company. Court went on the offensive immediately with the colonel.
"What the hell are you and your goons doing here?"
Dai said.
"Obviously, we are here for the same reason you are here. Fan Xiang is inside the walls of the property in the jungle, just a few hundred meters away."
Dai looked at the attractive brunette with the wet hair, then back to Court.
"That is why you are here, is it not? Or did you decide to go on vacation right in the middle of our partnership?"
Court said,
"Of course that's why I'm here. But that's a big piece of property and I haven't pinpointed Fan Xiang inside it yet. You guys showing up like this will just alert Shamroon's people and cause Fan to escape yet again."
Dai said,
"The moment for pinpoint actions has passed, Mr. Gentry. And believe me, we've been very careful in the way we arrived. No one in the Shamroon property knows we are here."
Now he looked to Zoya, but he kept his comments directed to Gentry, as if she were unable to speak for herself.
"And who is your friend here?"
She's nobody."
"Then you won't mind us eliminating her?"
"I would mind that very much,"
Court said, mustering as much toughness in his words as he could, considering the circumstances.
"I met her at my hotel in Bangkok. I couldn't very well come down to this resort by myself. That would have stuck out. She's just part of my cover."
Now Dai spoke directly to Zoya.
"I understand you are from Chicago."
Zoya kept the Chicago accent in place and a twinge of fear in her voice.
"Yes, sir. I barely know this guy. I was just looking for a free trip to the beach."
Dai stared her down.
"Where is your passport?"
"It was stolen."
"I see."
Court jumped in again.
"Colonel, I told you I would contact you when I had a target."
"Yes, you did. A day and a half ago, your inability to communicate in a timely manner has caused me considerable frustration."
"You hired a private operative. I am operating privately. Your inability to understand this fact is causing me considerable frustration."
Court glanced at Zoya. She was in character, looking at the floor nervously. She'd even generated some sweat on her forehead. Dai asked,
"How did you track Fan here?"
Court said,
"I encouraged Natapong Shamroon to give me the information. He said that his brother, Kulap Shamroon, would bring Fan here via helicopter after hiding out in the capital for a couple of days. I don't know if he is here or not, but I was going into the property to find out. If you get out of here before anyone sees you, then I will have a better chance of..."
Dai heaved a deep breath and blew it out.
"Fan Xiang communicated with the American embassy in Bangkok. He said Kulap Shamroon had him under guard. We were unable to pinpoint the location from where the email was sent."
Of course, Court pretended like this was news to him.
"Was there any other intel in the email?"
"No, nothing more. Only that he hoped America would rescue him."
Court now asked,
"Answer, Donald, where is he?"
Dai smiled a little, a look that gave Court chills. Finally, he said,
"You can't even pretend like you don't care anymore. That ship has sailed. Yes, your old friend is here. Until this operation is complete, he goes where I go. Don't worry, you will see him shortly."
"Good,"
Court said,
and then he added, "Because I want to beat his ass for hiring me into this fucking job." Dai smiled.
"You have nothing to complain about. I am a man of my word, and you will be paid when we achieve our objective. Look at the facts. The objective is within our grasp. We will raid the Shamrun compound tonight at midnight. We will kill everything that opposes us, and when we find Sergeant Fan, we can all go home."
Court said, "Let me go in with your team." Dai shook his head vehemently.
"No. You will stay here, under guard with Fitzroy, and your friend here as well. If something should go wrong tonight and Fan makes his escape, then I will continue to require your services. As much as it pains me to say it, you just might be the only person working for me who has accomplished much of anything in the past 2 weeks. The information that Fan was at the Shamrun property next door came from a signals intelligence interception by Beijing. But you already knew, and you were already here."
Despite what Dai had just said, Court knew there was no way the PLA colonel was going to let Zoya walk out of here alive. Dai couldn't kill her now, because he did not know if he'd need Court's compliance in the future. But if this group of paramilitaries around this property was able to assassinate Fan this evening, then the girl from Chicago would have to die, because she'd seen too much. Court wondered if Dai just planned on doing away with him when this was over as well. Court looked to the colonel.
"What about you? Are you going into that estate tonight?"
Dai grinned now. He wasn't quite the cat who caught the canary, but he was the cat who saw that someone had left the canary's cage door open.
"I will go in behind the raiding party. I would love to be the last thing Fan Xiang sees before he leaves this world. But I fear he will already be long dead by the time I get to him."
Dai looked up to Major Shi.
"The Major will take you and your friend here upstairs. You will stay there until our operation is complete."
Court and Zoya were led up a flight of stairs, down a hall, and through a set of doors into a large master suite. A sitting area and a bedroom off to the side. A balcony off the sitting area hung over a cliff nearly 200 feet straight down to white waves and jagged shoreline rocks. Sir Donald Fitzroy was sitting on the sofa, guarded by a single young Chinese officer in a black t-shirt and warm-up pants. Court saw that Don's right hand was bandaged, and the last 2 fingers on his hand were clearly gone. He wore a Huntsman and Son suit and a thin sheen of sweat, obviously from the pain he'd endured in the days since Court's actions had led to Fitzroy's torture. Before Court could speak to Sir Donald, she said,
"You will remain in the master suite. If you want water, there is the bathroom sink. You are not to step out onto the balcony. I will have men there with orders to shoot you if you do."
Court looked at Shi. "So, no dinner in the oven, and if you go out to look at the view, you die. Some B&B you're running here." Court's gallows humor was an attempt to draw a chuckle from Zoya, but she just stared at him like he was an idiot. Fitzroy didn't seem to be in the mood for jokes either. Major Shi just shrugged.
"The colonel makes the rules. I wouldn't have brought the Guelo in for this operation in the first place, and if I were in charge, I'd put a bullet in each of you now and lead the raid tonight myself."
"You drew the short straw, did you?" She just looked at Court a minute, then said,
"I can't go because I have an injury. I was shot in the leg, in the spa in Bangkok. It wouldn't surprise me at all if you were the one who did it."
"It would surprise me. I didn't shoot anybody but Natapong Shamrun." She said,
"Dai is in a trusting mood because he sees the end of this unfortunate episode for our nation, for our organization. That's why you are alive. If he has a reason to doubt you for an instant, that will change."
She turned and stepped out of the room with 2 of his men, and 2 more went out to the balcony, shutting the door behind them. Court looked at his watch and saw that it was 4:30 p.m. Dai's operation would kick off in 7.5 hours, and the Americans would arrive an hour after that. When the 3 prisoners were left alone, Court greeted Fitzroy, then turned to Zoya.
"Obviously you have questions."
Zoya said,
"Yeah, like who is this guy?"
"Don, this is Whitney. Whitney, Don.
Fitzroy made a face like he wasn't buying the name, then reached out with his left and shook Zoya's hand.
Sorry to meet you under such circumstances.
She just nodded. Fitzroy looked back and forth between the two. Finally, he said,
I've been in this room since the moment the Chinese got here to the villa this morning. They rented the place and entered the same time I did. They didn't plant any bugs. We can talk freely.
Court now winced with the inevitable fallout from what he was about to say.
Whitney, would you mind if I spoke with my friend here first? He might be able to clear up some things, so when I try to explain all this to you...
She got up and left the room without a word, walking into the bedroom. When Zoya shut the door to the bedroom, the older man said,
A girlfriend? Really, lad?
Court rolled his eyes. She's not a girlfriend. Then softly he said,
SVR.
Fitzroy jerked his head around towards the bedroom, astonishment on his face. Shifting back to Court, he said,
Her? You're mad.
This whole thing is mad, Don. I don't understand what the hell is going on.
She's Russian?
Yep.
And she's with you?
Sort of.
She trusted me, till it became apparent I was working for the Chinese. I had neglected to mention that to her. Fitz was still looking at the door to the bedroom.
Incredible. Russian intelligence? What's her angle in all this?
She's on my side now.
Raises the question, whose side are you on?
Court did not respond directly.
How's the hand?
Fitzroy held up the bandaged appendage.
It feels quite like some sod cut off two fingers with a straight razor.
Sorry about that.
Fitzroy reached for a decanter on the coffee table, filled with an amber liquid.
I've been looking at this since I got here. What do you suppose it is?
I don't guess it matters. You'll drink it anyway.
Too true,
Fitzroy said as he poured two healthy shots in crystal glasses. Without even smelling it, he downed his full portion. He made a little face.
Whiskey. Nothing special, but not utter shit either.
He gestured towards Court's glass. Court shook his head, so Fitzroy lifted it and took a sip. After he swallowed, he said,
I don't blame you about the hand. I blame whoever got you into this in the first place. You shouldn't even be involved.
What does that mean?
Come on, lad. I don't believe for an instant you just fell down from heaven when I got kidnapped by Colonel Dye. No. You were sent in, I'd say by Langley. But since Langley is your sworn enemy, I confess I'm at a loss. Whoever sent you on this fool's errand, I am quite certain you didn't come to assassinate Fan Xiang just to earn me my freedom. Your aim from the beginning has been to capture Fan and hand him off to a Western power.
Court said,
That was the job I took, but Dai will kill you if I double-cross him.
Of course he will. If you rescue Fan from all of this, Dai will put a bullet in my skull, and then he'll put a bullet in his own, because he can't go back to China without Fan's head on a pike. But now Fan is nearby, and Dai has 30 stone-cold killers readying to raid that property and give poor Fan a terminal overdose of lead. And at that point, it's anyone's bet what Colonel Dai will do to us.
Court spoke low. The agency is sending in an SAD team. 0100 hours. Fitzroy finished his second shot, then rubbed his meaty face with his good hand.
Dear Lord, what a mess.
Yeah.
The Englishman sat back on the couch and looked at Court for a long time.
What is it?
Court asked.
I'm trying to figure out how you became involved with Langley.
The short version is they told me you'd been snatched in Hong Kong and I was to go in and get intel from you and Colonel Dai. Something to identify Fan's location.
And you did just that.
Damn lot of good it did.
Don't blame yourself for any of this. If Langley had just stayed out of it from the beginning, we could have avoided the whole thing.
Court cocked his head. Who is we? Fitzroy reacted to Court's confusion.
Ah, I see. You don't know. Langley just told you I was over in HK working for Dai on the Fan hit.
That's right. Dai hired you to kill Fan Xiang. Was there something else?
I'd been in Hong Kong for weeks before I'd ever heard of Colonel Dai.
Doing what?
Fitzroy smiled.
Oh, boy. You really are in the dark, lad. I was over here on a job for MI6.
Court raised an eyebrow.
You work for Six? Things come up. You know how it goes.
Court nodded slowly.
Yeah, I guess I do. I was hired to oversee the assassination of a man inside mainland China. Damn difficult to do, as it happens.
Who? Who did they send you in to kill?
A PLA man called Major Song Julong. He was...
Court interrupted. He was the personal bodyguard of Fan Xiang's parents.
That's it. MI6 wanted him dead, so I sent a team into Shanghai to eliminate him.
Why would they want to kill the bodyguard of a couple of retirees?
It's a tad complicated, but Song was an agent for the West.
Pieces were falling together quickly for Court. Song sent Fan over the border into Hong Kong because his parents were killed in the car crash. He told Fan he'd be killed if he didn't run.
Yes,
said Fitzroy, and he poured himself another drink. Court said, Song tried to arrange for the Taiwanese to help Fan, but the PLA got there first and the defection fell apart. Fitzroy cocked his head.
No, lad. Whoever in the West that was really running Song, found out that Song's plan was to kill Fan's parents, so they hired me to go in and stop him. I sent in a team to kill the son of a bitch in Shanghai before he did it, but my lads were themselves killed in Shanghai. By who, I do not know.
Why did Song want to kill Fan's parents?
I was never told. I was just told there was a timeline, because if I didn't get Song, the Fans would end up dead. Which, unfortunately, is exactly what happened.
How did you get hooked up with Dai?
After Fan stumbled over the border with the PLA on his tail and no arms to run into, Colonel Dai came into Hong Kong looking for Fan. Someone told him I was here, and he knew about my network. He knew about you, in fact. It was like that. When he reached out to me, I spoke with MI6, and they realized they had a chance to use me and my network to grab Fan. My teams went looking for him, not to kill him, as Dai thought, but to capture him for the West.
Court said, but by then Fan had gotten himself hooked up with Wo Xing Wo, and your men got themselves killed. Fitzroy nodded.
That's when Dai kidnapped me, and that's when you showed up.
Court said, I was sent by Langley. This was sold to me like they had this once-in-a-lifetime chance to get Fan to the West so they could learn his secrets. Fitzroy smiled ruefully.
I'd say it was a twice-in-a-lifetime chance. The first time was at the border crossing. If Langley knew about that, which is a safe bet because the Taiwanese knew about it, then it is likely Langley was involved somehow.
Court said, I wonder if your people were sent in to scare Song. If he knew people were trying to kill him in Shanghai, he would want out of China. His handlers in the West could get him out, but only if he produced something valuable for them. Fitzroy understood.
It was the push he needed that would show him he was in danger. The catalyst that would get him to act. Someone in the West wanted Song to kill Fan's parents so that Fan would run over the border to avoid being put to death for losing his family collateral.
Court looked out past the balcony at the darkness there.
So, if this is all true, then the CIA was responsible for the murder of Fan's parents. CIA, MI6, Taiwan's NSB even. A safe bet they were all in it together. Either they conceived of the plan and pushed Song to go along with it, or they sat back and let it happen, happy to be the ultimate beneficiaries of the crime.
Court put his head in his hands.
Well, this blows. Exceedingly well put, lad.
Fitzroy drank silently, then held his glass out towards the balcony behind him, towards the big jungle in the distance, visible to the east of the ocean.
A cynical plan, to be sure, and a plan that is failing before our eyes, and the final nail in the coffin will take place when the Chinese enter that estate and kill Fan, and then the CIA enter that estate and shoot it out with Chinese intelligence. We are hours away from a nasty incident that could lead to nastier incidents, up to and possibly including war.
Court whispered to himself, Christ Almighty.
Both men sat in silence for a moment, then Fitzroy said,
There is something you can do.
Court lifted his head quickly.
What? Won't be easy.
Court stared Fitzroy down. Fitz said,
We arrived by boat from the airport this morning, so I saw the layout of the back of this property. I had a nice look around. It's not for me. I'm old, weak, and slow. But you could do it. Don't know about the girl, but I'd wager you could do it. Do what? This balcony here. It overhangs a sheer cliff, easily 50 meters of jagged rock down to the sea. It will be no picnic, but it could be done. There are boats there, tied to a dock. You could get in a boat, motor away, and get back to shore where there's a phone. You won't save Farm, but you will save the agency men on the way.
Court said, And it won't save you.
Fitzroy shook his head, then held up the glass of whiskey in a toast.
I'm a fucking dead man any way you slice it.
Court thought a moment. If the girl and I can get the guns off the men on the balcony, then maybe we can...
Forget it,
Fitzroy said.
You might recall I used to be in the game, not as a grumpy old man behind a desk, but as a grumpy young man behind a pistol. Trust me that I've seen the setup. Major Shi will have a dozen men with him here, even while the attack is going on, and the lines of assault to get to them around this house are no good. To get me out of here, you'd have to go through the front of the house, which means taking on each and every man on the premises, and they'll all know you are coming once you start shooting. No, lad. Making your way down the rock wall in the pitch-black night is your only bloody chance. You'd do well to take that chance and leave me to my fate.
Court knew Fitz was right. He said, Let me go talk to her.
I'll warn you again. I've seen you in action, so I feel confident you can make the climb. But I don't know about the woman. It was a straight drop down.
Trust me, she'll pull it off better than I will.
Fitzroy held his glass up.
Well then, go and live to fight another day.
Court looked at the French doors to the bedroom. She's pissed at me right now, so if I don't come out in 5 minutes, send help.
Fitz faked a little smile.
You're on your own there, lad. You have more training against buildings full of armed opposition than you do having a talk with an angry woman. Can't say I'd wager much on you now.
Court looked at the whiskey, then poured himself a healthy shot.
It's not utter shit, you say. Better a mouse in the pot than no meat at all.
Court looked at the glass of booze, then at the Englishman.
What? Beggars can't be choosers, lad.
Oh. Court downed the shot, stood, and headed for the bedroom.
As soon as he entered the bedroom, Court closed the French doors behind him, then found Zoya seated on the bed. She was working on something, which surprised Court, but when he saw she had taken the bedsheets and wound them tightly, then tied them together at one end, he realized he should not have been surprised. She added another sheet, making sure the knot was strong enough to hold her weight. She said,
While you were in there drinking and whispering with the fat guy, I was in here preparing my escape.
Off the balcony?
You have a better plan?
Court sat on a chair facing the bed.
No. In fact, I had that plan exactly.
Zoya kept working.
Maybe I'll run into you on the cliff.
After a few seconds, Court said, Will you look at me? Zoya did turn, though she didn't stop tying off pieces of the sheet.
So, the PRC? You are an assassin for the People's Republic of China?
Of course not.
Right.
It's cover, Zoya. The agency needed intel on Fan, and they knew I was the one who could get it. I was contracted for this op in the first place because I had a relationship with Donald Fitzroy. He is...
I know who Donald Fitzroy is. When I saw him, I realized you were not an agency man, as you said. You were, exactly as you told Colonel Dai, a private operator.
I've had a long relationship with Fitzroy.
A relationship?
Look, I wasn't lying before, but I wasn't exactly letting you in on the whole truth. The truth is, I worked for the agency for 14 years, and then one day, I didn't work for them anymore.
She stopped tying the sheets, then slid them under the blanket to hide them in case one of Xi's men came in. Looking at him, she asked,
Does that mean you quit, Or does that mean you were let go?
Well, I didn't exactly get a pink slip. They sent guys to kill me.
Court could see Zoya looking hard at his face, searching for micro-expressions that might give away honesty or deception.
Go on.
Kind of a long story, actually, but in those years when I wasn't with Langley, I took odd jobs, working for different handlers in the private sector. Fitzroy was one of those employers.
Doing what, exactly?
Court did not answer, so Zoya said,
Extrajudicial assassination?
Sometimes, he said, and then he amended it with, well, yes, pretty much exclusively.
There was no judgment from Zoya, no real expression of surprise for that matter. After several seconds, she said,
I'm going to ask you another question. It may be a difficult one for you to answer, but I need to know. Do you promise you will tell me the truth?
Court leaned forward.
I swear it.
Her eyes remained locked on his.
Are you the Gray Man?
Chapter 52. When Court just sat there looking at her, Zoya said,
The complete list of possible responses includes yes and no.
Court struggled for the words.
Well, from what I understand, the Gray Man is a term coined by Interpol several years ago. The Gray Man was the guy they blamed when something happened and nobody knew who did it.
No. The Gray Man is a former CIA operations officer who went into the private sector as an assassin after he was targeted by the agency. The SVR knew that much.
Court continued equivocating.
Right. I'm saying that just because there is an allegation that an assassination was conducted by the Gray Man, that doesn't necessarily...
Yes or no?
Court hesitated. Then he said,
Yes.
Zoya's mouth opened slightly, and it hung there a moment. Softly, she said,
Wow.
Court added,
But when I told you I could connect you with the agency people who will take care of you, I meant it. I talked with someone who would be very interested in speaking with you about coming to the U.S. for asylum. On your terms, of course.
How is it you are here chasing Fan for the CIA?
Court said,
The problems between me and the agency got straightened out, more or less. After that, I agreed to work for them again on a contractual basis. I was sent to Hong Kong because Fitzroy was there working for Colonel Dai, and Dai was holding him hostage, encouraging him to get the job done. The agency inserted me into the mix, had me go and take the job for Fitz and the Chinese. I was just supposed to gain intel for the agency so they could get an assault team in to snatch Fan. I realized early on that if Fan was taken by the U.S., then Fitzroy would die. I owed on my life. Another long story. I was trying to capture Fan myself to use him to earn Fitzroy's release.
What was the plan after that?
I was going to fuck Colonel Dai over and give Fan to the Americans anyway.
Zoya looked at Court as if he were insane.
That was a pretty ambitious plan.
When I say it out loud, it sounds a little hokey. And it got even more complicated when Fan told me he didn't want to go to the U.S. He wants to go to Taiwan.
Zoya said,
I hope you can take some constructive criticism.
Sure.
It sounds like you are trying to make too many people happy.
Court looked to the carpet a moment.
Welcome to my world.
Zoya said,
But you can't possibly still be considering infiltrating the Shamroon estate now, can you?
Court shook his head.
No. If we can get out of here, it will just be purely to save ourselves, and to warn the agency that the Chinese are here in numbers in Phuket. Dai's men will kill Fan, but maybe I can save the American paramilitaries heading here now. Those guys are assholes, but they're also my friends. He shrugged. Of course, if we leave, Fitzroy will still be here with Dai, so I am sure he will be killed.
Zoya pulled the fitted sheet off the bed and began tying it with the others. While she worked, she said,
No offense, Mr. Wonderful, but that's only a problem for you and Fitzroy. I don't even know the guy.
Yeah, I get it.
Court cussed under his breath.
Fucking Fan. Why did he have to send that damn email? We could have saved him if Dai hadn't shown up.
Zoya continued tying the sheets. She said,
I thought you just said Fan didn't even want to go to the U.S. If that was the case, why would he contact the U.S. ambassador?
Court walked around the room now, looking for anything he might use to aid them during an escape.
I guess he changed his mind, figured we were the only ones who could save his ass.
Okay, Zoya said. But if he's the guy who knows all the Chinese computer hacking secrets, how is it he can't manage to send an email without China not only hacking it, but pinpointing where it came from?
Court stopped looking around.
That's a good question.
He sat back down on a chair in the corner, thought it all through. Zoya just watched him while she worked, understanding that he knew more about this entire affair than she did. Finally, he said,
It's a setup.
What's a setup?
The email is a setup. Like you said, Fan doesn't want to go to the USA. He wouldn't have sent that email to the U.S. ambassador on his own, especially not in the way the Chinese could access. My handler told me the email was caught in a spam filter. Fan would know how to get something by a filter. He wanted it to get lost in the spam so the U.S. wouldn't see it, but the Chinese would see it.
The Chinese were the intended recipients.
That's right. Think about what Kulop Shamroon knows, either from the news or from Fan himself. He knows there are three nations after his prize, Russia, the USA, and China. Russia got wiped out at the Black Pearl, and the USA sent a total of one dumb asshole to rescue him.
Zoya got it.
That leaves China.
Court agreed. That leaves China. China sent a shitload of gunners to the Black Pearl, set the place on fire, defeated the Russians, and killed a lot of Shamroon's men. Kulop made Fan send that message to an email address Fan knew China had access to. Maybe Shamroon told Fan he'd cut his dick off if the Chinese didn't show in Phuket.
Zoya sighed. Perhaps it was just his thumb.
Yeah, maybe. But however he got Fan to comply, there is some kind of trap waiting for whoever hits that property.
Zoya wasn't buying all of it.
But the colonel just said the email was traced back to Phuket. If it really was Fan who sent it, he'd have to be here. Fan is worth a lot of money to Kulop. Would he put him in the middle of the place where he knew the Americans were coming?
Court thought this over too, and reflected back on what both Brewer and Colonel Dai had said.
It wasn't traced to a wireless address inside the Shamroon estate. It was traced to a cell tower. Shamroon had Fan sent it from somewhere nearby, but somewhere where he wasn't going to be in the middle of a Chinese attack.
Where could that be?
Court stood and went to the curtains covering the window out the balcony. He moved them to the side and peered out. A guard with a pistol in his shoulder holster leaned against the railing of the balcony, smoking a cigarette. He pointed angrily to Court, telling him to get away from the sliding balcony door, but Court just looked past the man, down to the ocean far below, and out to sea.
Do you know how to spoof a call from a cell phone tower?
Zoya said,
Of course. You take apart your cell phone and rewire the antenna in it to a directional antenna. Of course, you can't walk around with it. The antenna will be several times larger than the phone itself. But if you point it at a tower, you can make the call look like it came from one place, when you are someplace else.
Court smiled broadly. Something about this Russian woman's command of tradecraft turned him on, and he was pretty sure that meant he was nuts. He said,
You're exactly right.
Zoya shook her head now.
But you need line of sight on the tower. That's the only way. This island is mostly jungle. How are you going to find a direct line to...
Zoya stopped talking, walked quickly over to Court, and looked out past the balcony to the big, flat ocean to the south. She said,
That yacht.
Court nodded.
Damn right. The Medusa.
Shamroon owns the yacht?
I doubt it. That would be pretty obvious. No. It will be owned by someone he controls, or someone he made a deal with. It's registered in Genoa, whatever that's worth. Whoever is on the yacht is holding Fan, and probably protecting Shamroon.
You are very smart, Mr. Greyman.
It's not intelligence, it's mileage. I've seen a lot over the years.
Zoya wasn't listening. She was already thinking about their predicament.
If we got out of here,
found a way to make contact with your people to stop them from walking into the trap, and then went to the yacht to grab Fan. You could then use Fan to trade for that old guy in the other room.
Court joked. Right, that's all we have to do.
Zoya smiled, realizing all she had just said.
You aren't the only one around here who can come up with a crazy plan.
Court stepped back into the living room where Fitzroy was seated, and found his former employer sitting calmly in the darkness, doing his best to enjoy whiskey he did not truly respect, knowing this might well be his last. Court told Sir Donald they would attempt to break out, and Fitzroy should keep the faith, because they had a plan that might allow him to survive the night. Fitz didn't seem to believe him, but he kept a stiff upper lip, and he wished Court and his Russian friend godspeed. Court and Zoya stood together in the dark bedroom right before beginning their operation. Court took her in his arms, and she looked up to him, but he could feel her misgivings. He said,
When you told me your name earlier, I should have told you mine. I'm sorry.
I was upset about that, but I didn't know at the time you were a world-famous secret agent.
Court shrugged.
The most famous secret agent on the planet. What does that get me?
Killed, one would assume. Somehow you managed to beat the odds,
she added.
Chad?
It's Court. Court Gentry.
Zoya nodded.
Good luck, Gray Man.
She went up on her toes and kissed Court. It was quick and more friendly than romantic, but it was enough to make him feel better. Court let her go.
Good luck.
They separated. Court went to the living room, and Zoya stayed in the bedroom. Court and Zoya decided to attempt their escape exactly 60 minutes before the Chinese attacked the Shamroon estate. They reasoned that all the Chinese forces would be moving to their pre-deployment positions, except, of course, for the ones left behind to guard the prisoners here at the safe house. After dealing with the men on the balcony, Court and Zoya hoped to make it down to the boats at the water by the time the gunfire started nearby, providing them with a slight distraction. Major Shi had nearly a dozen men at the house with him, but he'd stationed only two on the balcony overhanging the water behind the suite where the captives were being held. Apparently Shi had decided no one would be foolish enough to try to make an escape down the sheer rocky cliff, especially late at night. Zoya opened the curtains to the balcony, right where Court had done so earlier in the evening. Court was still in the living room, standing at the balcony door there, but he had not moved his curtains yet. Zoya could see one guard sitting at a small table facing her direction. A second man was closer to Court's side of the balcony, standing there, hands on his hips. The seated man saw Zoya, and he stood. He motioned for her to step away from the glass, but she smiled, nodded, and waved, then unlocked the balcony door. Pretending to completely misunderstand the man's gestures, she opened the door but did not step out. In her American accent, she said,
Sorry, I know to stay inside, but do you speak English?
Yes, I speak English. Close the door now.
The man reached for his pistol inside his jacket, but just to put his hand on the grip. He held it there, another indicator for the clueless American woman that he meant business. As he stepped closer to the woman, his partner had reached into his own jacket for his pistol, and he faced the action 20 feet away. He never heard the living room door to the balcony slide open. Chapter 53 Zoya spoke again to the Chinese guard.
It's okay, sir. Can you get Colonel Dai on the phone? I need to talk to him.
No, go back inside, or I will...
The guard closest to Zoya turned to look at his partner, and he saw the bigger American man standing behind him, just now wrapping the cord of a floor lamp around the guard's throat. The American cinched the cord tight enough to lift the man off the ground with one hand, and with the other, he reached around and controlled the pistol, holding it tightly in place in its holster, despite the guard's attempts to draw it. The guard by Zoya spun into action, facing this new threat, pulling his pistol out in a fluid motion and bringing it to bear on the man's head. But before he sighted the weapon, he felt a loop of cord around his own neck from behind. It was yanked hard, and then, to his utter astonishment, he saw the legs of the woman out in front of him. While she held onto the cords around his throat, she used the leverage there to kick her legs up, wrap them around the extended weapon, and adroitly disarmed the guard by simultaneously kicking forward with the right foot into the slide of the gun and heeling back with her left foot into his hand. The pistol bounced on the deck of the balcony, and the woman's legs retracted, then cinched around the guard's lower back. And through all this, his windpipe was being crushed by the lamp cord. He flung himself back to the deck, slamming the woman hard, and using his own body to amplify the effects, but she held on, even improving her chokehold by looping a second ring of the cable around the man's neck and pulling it even harder. After less than 30 seconds, the loss of blood to the guard's brain caused him to pass out completely. Zoya quickly pushed him off her, grabbed the pistol, and looked across the balcony to see how Court was doing. Court already had his guard unconscious on his shoulder, and he walked him to the edge of the balcony. Court let the body fall, dropping the man 150 feet to his death. Zoya saw that the Sig Sauer pistol was already jutting from Court's waistband. Zoya panted with exertion as she jammed her guard's pistol into the small of her back and retied her warm-ups tightly around it. Then she reached down to lift the body. Court appeared next to her. Softly, he said, "I'll get him." But Zoya ignored him, took the unconscious man's arm in one hand, then executed a forward roll over the prostrate body. This gave her the momentum she needed to heave the man up onto her shoulder and then stand with him in a fireman's carry. Court's eyes widened as she walked slowly to the balcony's edge and then let the guard roll off her shoulder and fall away. Zoya rushed back into the bedroom, grabbed the length of bedsheets she turned into a rope with loops at both ends, then made her way back to the edge of the balcony. Court was there with her, and they wasted no time getting off the overhanging balcony, because they had no idea if someone was about to put bullets in their backs from one of the other windows in the big house. They kicked out over the side, lowered slowly till their hands were holding on to the balcony deck itself, and below, in the near darkness, they found a metal beam support structure holding the balcony away from the home. This they moved along easily, over and under like monkey bars, with Zoya leading the way because of her speed and comfort with the action. Court thought it was probably a good thing he couldn't even see the ocean below in the low light, but from the sound of the crashing of the waves, the shore was both very far beneath them and very rocky. When they got to the end of the balcony supports, they found themselves at a sheer cement wall, which marked the edge of the foundation of the house. There was almost no moonlight here, but when their eyes adjusted to the darkness, they could see it was 8 feet straight down to a narrow ledge of earth that rimmed the top of the rocky cliff. Court hung down and dropped a couple of inches, then moved over to Zoya to help her when she dropped. She came down on solid footing, not needing him there at all. She said,
"I'll be fine. You just worry about yourself and we'll go faster."
"Okay," Court said, completely unaccustomed to working with someone so skilled. He even thought back to his old paramilitary unit in the CIA, Task Force Golf Sierra, known around CIA as the Goon Squad. These were 6 of the best operators in all of the U.S. military and the intelligence services, mostly former SEALs or Delta Force guys, and Court had been by far the best free climber of the unit. Now he was completely outclassed by this Russian woman, and he wished he could just sit down and enjoy watching her at work. They began climbing down the cliff just 2 minutes after they left the balcony, but within another minute of starting their descent, they could hear shouting above them. They soon saw flashlight beams scanning the rocks to the left and right of their position, but unless she or one of his men wanted to climb under the balcony itself, there was no way they could be seen from above. Court and Zoya had discussed moving laterally along the cliff face until they could find a place wide of the Chinese safe house to make their way back up onto smoother ground on the hillside. But Court was glad they'd chosen to descend all the way down to the boats below. If they'd been caught out on the cliff by a flashlight now, they would have been only a few feet away from the balcony, and there would be nothing they could do but hold on to the wall while they were shot to death from above. They moved along close together with Zoya below Court, and she found ledges, handholds, and small wedges in the rocks where she could jam her tennis shoes in to brace herself. Often she called up to Court softly to give him directions, which he followed carefully. At one point, she had to use the makeshift climbing rope over her shoulder to hook it onto a rock and climb out to either side looking for a path. When she found her way, She had Court lift the loop of the bedsheets off its outcropping, and then she had Court slide the loop over his own shoulder while she hooked the other end on a closer rock. They moved this way for 20 grueling minutes, and by now Court guessed from the sound of the waves they'd made it halfway down. They still had another 75 feet or so to go, and he'd just climbed down level with Zoya when she announced that the face of the wall just below her slanted in, and she couldn't find a place for her feet.
Okay, said Court, straining under a tough handhold. Do you want me to try?
No, just find a good hold. Loop the rope around your head and shoulder, and hang on tight. You're going to have to lower me.
Right.
Court had to move to his left several feet to find a decent spot to hang on, and then he readied himself to take Zoya's weight if she fell. When he was ready, they both hooked into the bedsheets, he around his upper body and she around her waist. It took every bit of Court's strength to lower Zoya slowly, playing out the bedsheet with his right hand and taking the full weight of her 140-pound muscular physique. She was aware of Court's strain, and quickly she found a place to get a handhold inside the 45-degree inward slope of the wall. This took some of the weight away, and after another minute of work, she managed to make contact with the wall with both feet and hands. She called back up now.
You are going to have to come down the same way, and I'm going to have to hold you.
Can you do it?
Court asked.
We'll know in a moment, won't we?
Great.
Court took his time, put a hand in one of his footholds, lowered himself, and grabbed onto the other tiny outcropping where his other foot had been. He hung down now with his legs swaying in open air. Zoya could see them, right in front of her, but 3 feet away. She could grab him by the waist, but from there he'd have to drop, and she didn't know if she could carry both his weight and his momentum. She called up to him.
Okay, here's what we do. I hang out with one hand and one leg braced. You step down on my shoulder, I lean forward, and you step on my lower back. I'll pull myself and you back to the wall while you let go and grab onto me with your hands.
Jesus,
Court said, but he couldn't think of a better plan.
It's all in the timing, Zoya said.
She tightened her left handhold, forced her left foothold tighter to the wall, then swung out to the right. She fully extended her body away from the wall, and Court began climbing down her slowly. When he had both feet on her butt and one hand on her shoulder, she said,
Okay, one, two, three.
Court let go with his remaining hand, lowered his head quickly so it didn't smack against the lower edge of the outer wall, and rode to the deeper wall on Zoya's back as she swung back in with her right arm and leg. Once there, he got off her as quickly as possible, finding his own foot and handholds.
You all right?
He knew that couldn't have been easy for the 5'7" woman. She was clearly reaching exhaustion. He could hear it in her voice.
Fine. Take the rope off and give it to me. I may need both ends to traverse.
Court did as instructed. Zoya put all the bedsheets back over her shoulder, and she started back down. Court was still thinking about what she'd just had to do. As she lowered her left leg down to a spot far below her, he said,
Why don't I lead? You need a minute to...
A loud cracking sound in the rock interrupted him, and then, to Court's horror, Zoya dropped away suddenly. Court's mouth bled freely now, dripping onto the wet stone right in front of his face, though he could not see it. His right shin hurt because he'd smacked it on an outcropping as he threw himself forward, and now it was holding up more of his weight than it should have been, considering he had no power to control his shin like he did a hand or foot. His right wrist and hand hurt, not because he'd hit them as he'd lunged for Zoya, but instead because he was now horizontal to the wall, facing straight down, and 3 fingers of his right hand were up high and behind his back. Other than his bloody shin, the 3 fingers were the only part of him taking his body weight, because his left foot hung down in open air, and his left arm was hyperextended, his hand gripping the thin fingers of Zoya Zakharova's right hand. He'd lunged for her, snatching her hand out of free fall in desperation, and only then trying to find something of his own to grab onto. He'd banged his face in the process, and his leg, and although he had stopped her from dropping 70 feet to her death, he had no idea what either of them could do now to get out of this situation. He'd lost hold of her hand almost immediately, but now their fingers were locked tightly together. The position was agonizing for Court, but he knew the woman below him must have been in excruciating pain with the way he held on to her. Court spit blood into the wall so he could talk.
"You okay?"
The voice came from below. He couldn't see any part of her now, only the rock face in front of him.
"No, there is another recess here, deeper than the one before. I can't see anything, and my feet can't reach the wall."
"Can you stretch out with your left hand and find the wall?"
"I'll have to spin around, and I'll lose my grip with you. What are you holding on with?"
Court didn't want to tell her, but she was the more experienced climber. If there was a solution to this problem, maybe she could solve it. He said,
"Three fingers of my right hand. I can't move my legs without losing my grip."
"Shit,"
she said, and she said it in English.
"Dermo," he answered back.
He wasn't going to be able to hold her for long. She asked,
"How far down do you think it is to the water?"
"The same distance it is to the rocks," Zoya said.
"You're saying it doesn't matter?"
"Yeah."
Court knew there was only one thing they could possibly try.
"Look, I'm going to have to,"
Zoya knew before he finished the sentence.
"Do it. Swing me out, then back in towards the cliff, and let me go."
It was a Hail Mary, nothing more. He was going to have to generate some momentum by swinging her back and forth, in and out towards the wall below the underhang. And then, when he'd gotten her moving as fast as possible, he would let go, and she would fly in through the darkness and hope against all reason for three things to go right at the same time. One, that she made it to the wall before she lost momentum and fell to her death. Two, that she would somehow instantly find hand or footholds that would keep her from sliding off the wall. And three, that he didn't throw her so hard into the wall that she crashed face first into the rock, knocking her hard enough to where she couldn't grab onto a hold even if it was there for her. Court knew he couldn't hold on much longer.
"I have to start swinging."
"Go."
Slowly, at first, he rocked the dead weight in, then out, straining his left shoulder. After three full cycles, Zoya was moving enough for Court to feel significant pull against the three fingers holding him against the wall.
"Court?"
"Yes?"
"Do you pray?"
"I'm praying now."
"Then pray for me,"
she said.
"Okay. Two more swings and then we go. You've got this."
From below, he heard her say,
"You are a good man. You will rescue Fan and save your agency friends tonight."
Court said,
"Not without your help, Spider Monkey."
And then he swung in with all his might, let go of her fingers, and felt Zoya's hand slip away. Chapter 54 Court hefted his numb and nearly useless left arm, and somehow he managed to find a handhold for his left hand. He started pulling himself up, using all his might, even pressing his bloody face into the wet, cool rock as he did so. And as he did this, he shouted,
"Zoya!"
He'd heard her hit the wall, but it sounded way too hard, and then he clearly heard something fall, knocking against the wall as it went down. He didn't know if it was a piece of rock itself or if it had been an unconscious woman. There was no answer.
"Zoya!"
For five more seconds, he heard nothing. Then her voice, muted by the rock between them.
"I'm here."
"Are you hurt?"
"I'll live, but I dropped my gun."
Court closed his eyes, thanked God as relief washed over him, and said,
"I'll lend you mine."
After a few more seconds, Zoya said,
"Good news. I'm feeling the ceiling of this underhang. There are good handholds and footholds. When you get some strength back, you can climb down here, and I can reach out and help you position your feet."
"Okay,"
he said, blinking away misting tears of joy, because he was unable to wipe his face with the back of his arm.
"I'll just need a second."
The rest of the descent went much faster as the angle of the cliff decreased, and they made it the final 20 feet down to the shoreline by scooting along their backsides. On the rocky shore they embraced, and both of them wanted to fall over onto the rocks and just lie there. But there was no time. If there were boats here, there must have been other ways down to the sand, and while neither Court nor Zoya saw any of Shi's men, The glow of flashlights higher on the hills told them the Chinese guards were out in force and actively searching for them.
How do you feel? He asked.
Pretty beat up, she admitted. But I'll make it.
Court felt the same. His right shoulder hurt, his left hand hurt, his lip was fat and sore where he'd smacked it on the cliff, and his right shin was swollen and aching. The two boats at the dock 50 yards from the cliff were wooden-hulled stern-drive 12-footers. They clearly belonged to one of the private homes around, and quite possibly the Chinese safe house itself. Court ripped the wiring out of the engine of one boat, then hot-wired the simple ignition system on the other in just a couple of minutes, while Zoya held the pistol and watched for trouble. Finally, the engine started. Zoya jumped off the little dock and into the vessel with the line in her hand, and Court went full throttle, fighting his way through both the darkness and the incoming waves. As they raced off, Court could barely hear the snaps of gunfire over the sound of the engine and the crashing waves, but she and his men had been armed with pistols, and they were a couple 100 yards away. It would take a hell of a good shot in this bad light to hit a bouncing and swaying target on the move at that distance. Zoya and Court raced safely around a rocky point and back to the west, away from the Shamroon estate, and back in the direction of their hotel. Just 10 minutes later, they came ashore at the Trisara Phuket, docking quietly at the lighted pier, and then jogging towards the buildings. It was still 10 minutes to midnight, so there were quite a few couples at the bar, and still a few at the beachside restaurant. Court said,
"We need a phone and some diving gear."
Both of them had dropped by the dive shop at the resort the day before, and though it would be locked up now, Zoya insisted she could find a way in. Court raced back to the suite, approached from the patio, and looked inside, making certain she hadn't left anyone there. It was exactly as he'd left it, and he used the butt of the SIG pistol to break the window next to the back door so he could slip inside. Here, he changed into black cotton pants and a black t-shirt, then searched through his gear and discovered that one of Xi's men had taken the Glock pistol. The .38 revolver was still in his backpack, however, so he dropped that into his pocket and put the SIG in his waistband. He returned to the lounge and walked through, then out onto the bar area by the pool. He walked between several tables full of guests, eyeing them carefully. A woman took pictures of her group, one of her friends asked her to dance, and then she covered her phone with her napkin and followed him to the dance floor on the other side of the pool. Several others from the big tables also went up to dance, so it was no great feat for Court to merely pass by and slide the napkin and the phone off the table. Seconds later, he stepped into darkness outside the lights of the sedate outdoor nightlife here at the resort, and he dialed Brewer's number. There would be no encryption on his end of the call, which meant he'd have to be careful with what he said. She answered on the first ring.
Brewer.
It's me.
Is this Mr. Cavalcade?
No, it's Carlsbad here.
I'm glad you called early. The time for the party has been moved up an hour.
Court almost choked on his response.
No!
Yes, my friends found a ride that would get them there faster, so they—
Court interrupted.
Bad idea. They need to skip this party, that's why I'm calling.
Don't be ridiculous. They've been looking forward to it.
Court said,
Listen carefully. My old friend from Hong Kong is here with a huge group of his friends, and right now they're walking through the front door of the same party your friends are headed to. Not sure there would be enough booze to go around.
There was a long pause.
You're sure?
You need to call your friends right now.
It's too late.
Do it. It's a surprise party.
Brewer hesitated, then said,
I don't follow you.
My friend from Hong Kong will be the surprise guest, and there will be a huge reception waiting for him.
Where is the man my friends were hoping to meet?
I'm pretty sure he's nearby at another party on a yacht. You could help me check on that.
Right. Name and registry?
No. Make the call first.
Brewer put Court on hold. Many times in his career as a CIA paramilitary, he'd been one of the guys in the helicopter racing into a target, only to get the word to turn around and go home. More than once, he was in sight of his objective when the order came. It sucked when it happened, but sometimes it sucked more when it didn't happen, when he wasn't recalled even after intelligence pointed to a problem at the objective. Brewer came back on the line.
People are trying to reach my friends now.
Good.
Court couldn't hear any helicopters in the distance, but he knew SAD might be flying in helos with noise reduction technology, so he couldn't say for certain they weren't over the Shamroon property right now. Brewer next said, "The boat you mentioned?"
"The Medusa, out of Genoa."
There was a pause while Brewer typed that in. It only took a few seconds for her to say,
"Got it. Running a check on the ownership."
Just then, Court heard the unmistakable sound of helicopter rotors somewhere in the night. As a warning, he said,